views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Radio Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Welcome, welcome, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, David Wren, a.k.a. Dave from L.A. Just want to thank you all for listening today. Today is September the 16th, 2015, and just want to thank you. It's Wednesday. I want to thank you all for listening today. Hey, we got a great show for you today, but before we get into that, as always, let's start off with the important business of support, and that's support for Black Talk Radio Network and all the programs that Black Talk Radio Network brings to you. Please continue to support. Tell people, tell your friends about it. Spread the word about it. Also, if you can assist the program in anything, even if you have some events, some free events that you know of that's happening that you know that should be featured within the radio listenership, please do that, because that actually helps and supports the radio network. And also, if you're looking to, if you have sponsors or whatever, hey, have them give Black Talk Radio Network, contact them and see what could be worked out, because I would tell you, so important that we continue to support what we feed off of, because if we don't, we won't be fed in some time. Well, everything has a finite lifespan, and you need to maintain what it is that you have, and you need to energize it. And so, you know, it takes a lot to bring a radio network and shows to you. And it's not like anything else that you have, because this is something that each of the programmers and each of the people have to decide, you know, what's something that it's going on in the world, or what should we talk about, what's on the agenda that's purposely meant to edify you. So a great way to give back is to support it. You can make a monetary donation, do that, sponsorship, do that. All of that is necessary so that this network can continue to grow. Also, everyone, go to Tando Radio Show on Facebook. We have our page there. Give us a like when you get there. If you like what we're doing, and just read some of the stories, and if you have a question or comment, definitely place it there. So. Oh, and people, please don't send me hidden messages. I got a lot of hidden messages from people where, if you send me a message, please put exactly what the message is about, because I have no clue on some of the messages. And I don't know. I guess because people are busy, they don't really express everything in the messages. It's totally blank. And so just if you have a message for me or a question, please leave it there, and I will get back to you. Digging me pronto. Please don't give half messages, because I can't read mine. I can't read between the lines on messages. So, okay, everyone, today's show, I want to go over some current events, but, you know, in doing some current events, we talked about there is an agenda to really control. And actually, there's an agenda to enslave our children even more. And that's where the real future is. And that's where the target of a lot of things that we see happening going on is, they're looking to get our children. And I think it's so important that we know this so that we can protect our children. And more importantly, so that we can protect ourselves from the agenda. And I think that's so, so important. So one of the things that I wanted to do was talk about something that we have posted in Tando Radio Show, which is so important. Oh, but I forgot, before we get going, if you'd like to get in on the conversation today, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 541-715-3660, and the participant code is 599032. If you have any questions or comments you would like to get in on it, definitely meet us there. Okay, so inside of Tando, posted an article that is really, you know, it kind of, I think it really needs our attention, and it's so, so important that we do. Our young people are being exposed to, we know, always talk about the prison industrial complex and how it's the new slave program, and it's this new slave system, and the extension of slavery is really not an extension of slavery, it is slavery, and how they're actually using the school systems and just the overall enslavement system to indoctrinate young people into giving up their freedom and taking their freedom away from them from the very beginning. And this really being institutionalized within our school system. There's an article that I posted that I think is really, really important that would love for you to take a look at. And that article, and what's more important than our young people, is the Rutherford Institute public school system, public school students are the new inmates in America's police state. And this is so true. And we really need to take a look at that. It's a great article there. Take a look at it. We're going to talk about it. And because of that, what I did today, I kind of changed up the show. I wanted to just really focus on this. Found a really good video that I want you guys to hear. And it's so necessary. One of the things that I do is I like to bring different people's opinion to things of what they're seeing. And bring it to your attention so that you'll know what's going on and then you can make a decision for you and your family that is in your best interest. And I firmly believe that there is a very directed attack at our young people, and it starts from our schools. So I have this one video, and I'm going to post it here inside of Tando that we're about to listen to. It's a really good one. So check out this video. It's talking about the public school system and what the psychology behind it really is. And I really do believe that this has more than merits and has more than validates and substantiates itself because of what's going on with our children. Think about it. But I don't want to get into it too much. What's up?
Yeah, how are you today?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing? Good.
I just wanted to bring a current event to your attention. It's blowing up on Twitter, even caught the attention of President Obama today, and it ties into what we're about to listen to. So I don't know if you heard this story, but it's about the Muslim teenager who built the digital clock and his engineering teacher. I guess this engineering teacher, I don't know. I mean, I think I could tell a digital clock from a bomb. Okay. You know, because if there's no C4, there's no dynamite, if there's no explosives connected to this clock, then that's a pretty good idea that it's not a bomb and it's a digital clock. And even now, after they arrested that young man, even now the police are saying that they still might try to prosecute him. Now, of course, it's up to the prosecutor. But they're saying they think about charging him with making a fake bomb. I mean, they just doubling down on their ignorance in their persecution of this young man.
Right. And, you know, Scotty, a lot of that is because what's happening is that you're seeing when absolute power has never been challenged, and they feel that they're entitled to whatever they say is the truth, and whatever they want to do, they can get away with. And that's because we allow this to happen. Yes, I heard the story, woke up this morning and checked it out. And it is a very, very telling thing about, you know, just what we're going to be talking about today. And I didn't even really mean to it didn't coordinate it that way. But Scotty, you're absolutely right. This is exactly what it is in relation to. Because let me tell you, if a child brings you, it's obvious what the intent was, and it's obvious what you have there, you know. And it's, you know, what the real precedence that's being set is that no matter what, the state will decide the future of your children even beyond the anything that's reasonable or anything that you so-called thought you had in ways of right. They can make up things as they go along. And this is what you're seeing, the advent of absolute power being placed in. And guess what? They're going to take your children, and they have an agenda for that. And yes, Scotty, it's a ugly situation, but it's right where we are, and it's starting to make itself because there is an agenda that's behind this. And pretty soon, the state will be the ward of every, not only your children, but of every person. This is why they're bringing in these laws of vaccination without exemption, telling you what you're going to do, and you have no rights in situations, or falsely arresting you, or even not even investigating to see if there was even something that they needed to investigate, because the you know, that could have been dealt with, and this whole story should be totally over, way and beyond. But they're going to push this because there's an agenda behind it, and the agenda comes from the very same people that you go to ask for relief from them from. This is, yeah, this is a very telling story, and it's, I'd like to see how this plays out. And they're going to, you know, just thinking about prosecuting him for the attempt of it. They're, from everything that I've seen and everything that I've read and seen, it's quite obvious what this is all about. This is about precedent. They want to set precedent. So now, remember when Janet Napolitano, if you see something, say something. This is a total state of tyranny that they will have every single person. And what better way to get you to go along with these this acts of tyranny than to threaten the children? Because if they know if you will allow anything for your children, you've already surrendered.
And that see something, say something don't even apply in this case. No. Because if this child, and he's only 14, if this child had nefarious intentions to scare people, and he wouldn't have took it straight to his teacher. Yeah. He wouldn't have took it to his teacher and say, you know, look at this clock I made. But that teacher want to contact the authorities and call the police on him anyway. So, I mean, I'm looking at the teacher's intentions as suspect.
Oh, without a doubt. And you know what? I'm glad you said that, Scotty, because this is the whole institution that we have going on here. And that's exactly what it is. The teacher was the first contact. And the child brings you a clock, and you get suspicious of a clock. And now you call the authorities, you call the law enforcement on a clock, which could have been easily examined right then and there by way of x-ray and so many different other things. And then this whole thing is over. And then look at the teacher and say, are you serious? Are you serious?
And this is supposed to be an engineering teacher. And this was supposed to be an engineering teacher.
Right, Scotty. Exactly.
And I think it's also important to point out this, the state of Texas. And in their textbooks, they're teaching those children that slavery, it wasn't no slavery, those were internships. So, yeah.
Exactly. No, that didn't happen. The terrorist act of slavery is something that they want to wipe away, but they want to push you and say that they you should never forget the so-called events in New York, the ones that they did on both ends, the slavery and the ones in New York. It's because there's an agenda that we have to address, and we're going to have to put the state, put the institutions in their place. They are not above the law, and they have no right to have subjects at all. Because this is nothing more than, the continuance of the domestic violence that we have in this country and is growing. And let me tell you something, doesn't matter who you are, this snake is going to bite you also. The venom of this snake will flow through your veins also, because it's never enough with them. They want to enslave everyone, and to get even more out of their slavery, they have no regards for human life at all. The only people that really can stop this is not the authorities. They are the ones that's causing it. It's you. and I. And this is what we need to do. This is why this Black Talk Radio Network is so important and all the programming that we have here. So, but hey, let's jump into this video. And it's talking about this institution, because you think about it. Our children go to school at a very early age for a reason. They can condition these young people for what they want. And I don't want to talk too much about it because we're going to come back. Scotty, check this out. Let's play this and then let's really have a discussion, because there's a whole lot more to this than what's really going on, as you know, and it's time for us to let the people know. Now it's up to them on what they're going to do. Let's play this video real quick.
Is there an idea more radical in the history of the human race than turning your children over to total strangers who you know nothing about, and having those strangers work on your child's mind out of your sight for a period of 12 years? Could there be a more radical idea than that? Back in colonial days in America, if you proposed that as an idea, they'd burn you at the stake, you mad person. It's a mad idea.
A short, angry history of modern schooling, and really what it is a 900-page book I've just finished, condensed to 1 hour. So I would have given you a five-minute break before starting, but somebody's a harsh taskmaster here. The information's rather dense, and rather than rely on my own failing memory, I'll work from notes. I'll apologize in advance, but this is very, very, very strong stuff. Mass schooling of the young by force is a creation of the four great coal powers of the 19th century: Germany, England, France, and the United States. Its final conception, structure, and later development arises from the logic that fossil fuel used in conjunction with machinery imposes on society. This reality is masked by an earlier anticipation of mass schooling in certain utopian and religious writings about social order and human nature. But make no mistake, in the Western world, there was never any such animal as mass schooling until coal came along paired with machinery. You shouldn't be fooled any more than Charles Francis Adams was when he observed in 1880 that what was being fashioned for children, unfortunate enough to be caught in the proposed school net, which hadn't happened up to then, combined the characteristics of the cotton mill, said Adams, and the railroad with those of a state prison. That's the Adams who had two presidents in his family. After the Civil War, certain utopian speculations about isolating children in compounds and subjecting them to deliberate molding routines began to be discussed seriously by the policy-making managers of business, government, and university life. These discussions were inspired by the potential for centralized mass production made possible by coal-driven machinery. Railroad development that was also dependent on coal, and startling new inventions like the telegraph. The principal motivation for this revolution in family and community life wasn't only greed for money, although that was there, but also the philosophical conviction, which approached a religion in its intensity, that early indoctrination would lead to an orderly scientific society led by the best people, unhampered by the democratic tradition or American libertarian attitudes. Forced schooling was the prescription to make the bulk of the population alike, dependent on remote authority, not local authority, for allocation to one or another station in the economy. No more Ben Franklin's, no more Tom Edison's were going to be allowed. Individuals would be prevented from taking up their lives until an advanced age. During the post-Civil War period, childhood was extended about 4 years. In the late 19th century, a special concept was invented to lock older children in place. It was called adolescence, and that was a phenomenon unknown to the human race before that time. And the infantilization of young people did not stop at the end of the 19th century, but it continued right on through the 20th. Child labor laws were extended to cover more and more occupations. The permissible age of leaving school became higher and higher. The number of occupations not demanding schooling became fewer and fewer. You notice I use the term schooling and not education. By the 1970s, it was not unusual to find graduate students well into their 30s. From the start, there was a purpose behind schooling, which had nothing to do with what parents, kids, or communities wanted, but concentrated on what a highly centralized economy and a strong political state was thought to need. What that was can be seen from this excerpt from a speech Woodrow Wilson made to businessmen in 1914. I'm quoting Wilson without changing a word. "We want one class of persons to have a liberal education. And we want another class, a very, very much larger class of necessity, to forego the privilege of a liberal education and fit themselves to perform specific, difficult manual tasks." By 1917, the major administrative jobs across America in schooling were under the control of a group of interests referred to in the press as the Education Trust. That term vanishes somewhere in the middle 1930s, but it's quite common in the newspapers of the teens and the 20s. At the first meeting of the Education Trust, the attendees included representatives of Rockefeller, Carnegie, Harvard, Stanford, the University of Chicago, and the National Education Association. "The chief end of the new education," wrote Benjamin Kidd in 1918, "was to," I'm quoting, "impose on the young the ideal of subordination. The primary target of the first 30 years of forced schooling was the tradition of independent livelihoods in America. Students were to learn to think of themselves as employees competing with one another for the favor of the boss, not as entrepreneurs like Ben Franklin competing to serve the public. It was believed that only in this way could the menace of overproduction in America be contained." You'd have to, ladies and gentlemen, read into the primary sources, as I spent years reading, to see how often the term overproduction emerges in these discussions of businessmen between 1880 and 1910. They were terrified that the early tradition of America, that people worked for themselves, would continue, and that this would make it impossible for large central corporations to get financing to work. Since the machinery costs so much money, who would constantly replace that machinery if at any moment the peril of thousands of people opening small competing interests were a loss? So it had to be put to death. In 1919, Arthur Calhoun's Social History of the Family informed the nation that the child was passing from the family, I'm quoting now, into the custody of community experts. And he offered a significant prophecy that we could expect in time to see a system of public education, quote, designed to check the mating of the unfit. In 1922, Mayor Hyland of New York City, alluding specifically to actions in schools of the Rockefeller Foundation and other corporate interests, said in a public speech that the schools had been seized as an octopus would seize its prey by, quote, an invisible government. You'll find that reference in Diane Ravitch's book, The Great School Wars. Be good now, later. The 1920s were a boom period for forced schooling, as well as for the stock market. A book called A Sociological Philosophy of Education, published in 1928, claimed, it is the business of teachers to run not merely the school, but the world. In 1929, the famous creator of educational psychology, Edward Thorndike of Columbia Teachers College, announced, I'm quoting, academic subjects are of little value. His colleague at Teachers College, William Kirkpatrick, boasted in his book, Education and the Social Crisis, that the whole traditional system of rearing the young was being made over by experts. Meanwhile, in the project offices of an important employer of those experts, the Rockefeller Foundation, executives were hearing from its president, Max Mason, on April the 11th, 1933. Don't say that I'm not giving you very specific references that can't be checked. That a comprehensive program was underway to rationalize social control and the control of human behavior, inspired by the genetic work of an Eastern European scientist, Hermann Muller, at the University of Texas. Rockefeller, Carnegie, and other large private foundations had been investing heavily in genetics. Muller had used X-rays to override genetic law, inducing mutations in fruit flies. And that set off a line of thinking that it might be possible to create life and shape it as you wanted to. Muller preached that planned breeding was necessary to bring mankind progress, and his proposal received enthusiastic endorsement from most of the greatest scientists of the day. He reduced it to a 1,500-word geneticist manifesto, and 22 distinguished American and British biologists signed it. The conscious guidance by the state of human sexual selection is called for, said Muller. What was wanted, he said, was a project of racial hygiene such as the policymakers in Germany were pioneering, a program where eugenics was state policy and where scientific research shaped society. A February 1934 progress report from the Rockefeller Endowments asked the question, can we develop so sound and extensive a genetics that we can hope to breed in the future superior men? Just a few months before this report appeared, the executive director of the National Education Association announced that his organization expected, I'm quoting directly now, to accomplish by education what dictators in Europe are seeking to do by compulsion and force. You can't get it much clearer than that, can you? Between 1967 and 1974, teacher training all over the United States was covertly revamped through the coordinated efforts of a small number of private foundations, think tanks, global corporations, universities, and several other interests working through the United States Office of Education and through key state ed departments like those in California or New York. The most important documents in this transformation were three, and I'm going to name them for you. Bloom's taxonomy of educational objectives was the first. An extensive government exercise in futurology called Designing Education for the Future was the second, and the Behavioral Teacher Education Project was the third. That was an enormous manual of over 1,000 pages, which in time impacted on every school in the United States. While other documents exist, these are the most important representatives of the whole. They'll serve to make clear to you what project is underway. And I'll take them one by one. Designing Education, produced by the Federal Education Department, redefined education after the Prussian fashion as, quote, a means to achieve important economic and social goals of a national character. State education agencies would henceforth act as on-site federal enforcers, ensuring compliance of local schools with Washington directives. It proclaimed that each state education department, quote, must be an agent of change. State departments were, quote, to lose their identity as well as their authority in order to form a partnership with the federal government. Now, I think you and I both are aware that what we're talking about here is a form of treason. There is no mention whatsoever in any of the founding documents of this country of federal involvement in education. That's not just an academic thing. It was deliberately kept away from the central political power because of the obvious chance to pervert it if it were handed to the power that controlled the army. The second document, the gigantic Behavioral Teacher Education Project, outlined the teaching reforms to be forced on America after 1967. So we're talking about 31 years ago. If you ever want to hunt this thing down, it bears the U.S. Office of Education contract number, and I can give it to anyone afterwards. I have it here, but I won't bother to read the 44 digits. The document sets out clearly the intention of its creators, nothing less, I'm quoting from the document now, than the impersonal manipulation through schooling of a future America in which few will be able to maintain control over their opinions. An America in which each individual receives at birth a multipurpose identification number, which enables employers and other controllers, that's a direct quote from the document, to keep track of underlings and to expose them to direct or subliminal influence when necessary. Readers learned that chemical experimentation on minors would be normal procedure in the post-1967 world. That is surely a pointed foreshadowing of the massive Ritalin interventions which accompany the practice of forced schooling at present. The Teacher Education Project identified the future as one, I'm quoting again, in which a small elite will control all important matters, one in which participatory democracy will largely disappear. It was your tax money or your father's and mother's that paid for this document. Children will be made to see through school experience that their classmates, this is a very subtle point, so I'll start that again. Children will be made to see through school experience that their classmates are so irresponsible and inadequate that they must be controlled and regulated for society's good. That's of a category, I think, equivalent to the wag your dog scenario that I think we're going through right now. According to the project, postmodern schooling will focus, this is a direct quote, on pleasure cultivation and other attitudes and skills compatible with a non-work world. Notice how the tremendous rise in school violence and general school chaos in the late 1960s can be seen as providing a reasonable justification for the sharp constriction of traditional intellectual schooling. Each outburst of childish disorder echoing through the press was like an advertisement promoting the need to surrender community control to the management of experts, and for the introduction of emergency measures like special education and Ritalin. Anyone who taught school during that period in a large city, as I did, will remember how teachers and administrators were suddenly stripped of any effective ability to discipline children by the intervention of outside agencies. You are at liberty to decide whether that was coincidental or not. It makes sense, though, doesn't it, that irresponsible, semi-literate children kept in that condition by authority will become irresponsible and semi-literate adults, and that such people can't be trusted with decisions. The National Teacher Training Document informed teacher educators that under these circumstances, teachers were to be trained as therapists, translating prescriptions of social psychologists into practical action in the classroom. The third of the new gospel texts was Benjamin Bloom's taxonomy. In his own words, I'm quoting, "a tool to classify the way individuals are to act, think, or feel as a result of some unit of instruction." Using the methods of behavioral psychology, children would learn improper thoughts, feelings, and actions, and have their improper attitudes brought from home remediated. In all stages of school manipulation, testing would be essential to locate the child's changing mind on an official rating scale. Bloom's taxonomy spawned a number of important descendants which you've heard of. Mastery learning was one, outcomes-based education a second, and the current school-to-work government-business collaboration a third. Each was designed to classify individuals for the convenience of social managers and to control the mind and movements of the young. But what was the purpose? Why was this being done? A major piece of the answer can be found by reading between the lines of an article which appeared several months ago in the June 1988 issue of Foreign Affairs. Written by the owner of U.S. News and World Report, the essay praises the American economy and predicts that its lead over Europe and Asia is so psychological in nature that no nation can possibly catch up to us because our workers are unique. Now, unless you believe in master race biology, this advantage can only have come from school training of the American young, in school and out, by indoctrination techniques which produce attitudes useful to management. And what are those attitudes? Folks, would it be possible if we took a 5-minute break? These lights are a little bit bright, and I just need a short rest owing to advanced age. But in 5 minutes, I promise you that I'll answer the question I just asked. Just rest for 5. I bet you need it more than I do. Offers from a strong craft tradition. And the workers demand a large voice in decision making. Asia's even worse off, says Zuckerman, competitively, because although the worker is silenced in Asia, religion, tradition, and government over there interfere with what a business can do. So that's his first case, that the American worker, that's your sons and daughters grown up, is a pushover. Next, says Zuckerman, workers in America live in constant panic. They know companies here owe them nothing. There's no outside power to appeal to. Fear is our secret supercharger. Gives management here a flexibility that other nations will never have to such an extent. And some of the evidence he offers for that is really compelling. He said in 1996, after 5 years of record economic expansion, half the employees of large firms feared being laid off. The best part of that, said Zuckerman, was that it represents double the number of people worrying 5 years ago when things weren't nearly as good. So fear keeps a brake on American wages. Next, he says, in the United States, what look like managerial decisions are actually made by abstract mathematical rules, which are manager-proof as well as worker-proof. No sentimentality, no ideological treachery by a soft-hearted boss can make more than temporary inroads on corporate momentum here, because the accountant's bottom line rules everything. And finally, he says, our endless consumption completes the golden circle. Consumption driven by a non-stop American addiction to novelty, which provides American business with the only reliable domestic market in the world. Elsewhere in hard times, business dries up because people sit on their money. But here, no. Here we shop till we drop. We mortgage our futures in bad times as well as good. And I think Zuckerman is right. There isn't much doubt that the fantastic wealth of American big business is psychologically and procedurally grounded, and that the training for this mental state and the necessary docility it requires comes from the American classroom. Schools must train individuals to respond as a mass, to be frightened, envious, bored, emotionally needy, and generally incomplete. It's common sense. A successful mass production economy has to have such a clientele. The small business, small farm economy, like the Amish have, require individual competence, thoughtfulness, compassion, and universal participation. But ours requires a well-managed mass, leveled, spiritless, anxious, familyless, friendless, godless, and obedient. People who believe the difference between Coke and Pepsi is a subject worth arguing about. We need people for this economy who learn that status is purchased, so that when you buy something, you're immediately dissatisfied with it because it's not producing the rush that you expected from the advertising. We need people who learn that others manage our lives, that most people, including our own parents, are ignorant and irrelevant, that God is an obsolete fancy, not worth bothering about, and that ultimate satisfaction comes from official approval. The fantastic wealth of American big business is a direct result of school training. Schools training children to be fearful, bored and addicted to novelty, suspicious of themselves and others, and voiceless in important matters. That's what the bells are for, they say, and now for something different. The secret of American schooling is that it doesn't teach the way children learn, as I think Inga represented well to you, nor are schools supposed to. School has been engineered to serve a particular kind of economy and a strictly layered social order, not to benefit kids and families. That's why it has to be compulsory. The prime directive of schooling is to retard maturity and wholeness. School is the first impression children get of organized society. And like most first impressions, it is the lasting one. The decisive dynamics which make forced schooling poison to healthy human development are easy to spot. And I'll give you a small package of these. The work with which most classrooms engage the child is not significant work. It doesn't satisfy real needs pressing on the individual, doesn't answer real questions that experience raises in the young mind. It doesn't contribute to solving any problem encountered in actual life. The psychological effect of making work external and foreign to individual longings, experience, questions, and problems renders the victim listless. Growth and mastery only come to those who vigorously self-direct. We've known that for thousands of years. If you doubt it, examine the differences between elite education in any century you choose and the direction of common training. I'll be talking a little specifically about this tomorrow morning. Initiating, creating, reflecting, and other things like that, active things, are precisely what the structure of schooling is set up to prevent on one pretext or another. As I watched it happen for 30 years, it takes about 3 years to break most kids. 3 years confined to environments of emotional neediness with nothing real to do. And I must say, Inga, if you're here, you added another dimension to this for me by showing that formula that only one third of the time inside a school, it's like the army, you're actually doing anything at all. In such environments, songs, smiles, bright colors, and cooperative games do the work better than angry words and punishments. Has it ever struck you as odd that the Prussian government, now of course we don't have a nation called Prussia anymore, because the nation called Prussia overwhelmed the other 171 German states, and Germany became Prussia, or Greater Germany was Prussia, and we got the two great wars of the century from Prussia. Has it ever struck you as odd that the Prussian government was so sympathetic and helpful to the experiments of Frederick Froebel, the inventor of kindergarten, and to Heinrich Pestalozzi, who was the inventor of Fun and Games Elementary School? Both those guys were underwritten by the Prussian government. All their assistants were Prussian government agents. It's a little strange to think of the guys with the points on their helmet and all the funny balloons. But there was a method to that madness. The strongest meshes of the school net are totally invisible. Constant bidding for a stranger's attention creates a chemistry whose products are the common characteristics of modern school children. Whining, dishonesty, malice, treachery, cruelty. The unceasing competition for official attention. Have you ever seen the little arms go out of the sockets jumping out of the seat? In the dramatic fishbowl of a classroom delivers cowardly children, little people sunk in chronic boredom, little people with no apparent purpose for being alive. The procedure is identical to that which causes caged rats to develop eccentric mannerisms when they have to press a bar for food on an aperiodic reinforcement schedule, where food is delivered, but at random, but the rat doesn't know that. Much of the bizarre behavior school kids display is a function of the reinforcement schedule and the endless confinement and inactivity which slowly drives children insane. Trapped children, like trapped rats, need close management, as any rat psychologist will tell you. See, I'm more eloquent when I'm seated. And you will be too when you get to be my age and weight. In the first decades of the 20th century, a small group of famous academics, symbolically led by John Dewey and Edward Thorndike of Columbia Teachers College, Elwood Coverley of Stanford, and a handful of others, together with their corporate and financial allies like J.P. Morgan, Vincent Astor, Commodore Whitney, Andrew Carnegie, and John D. Rockefeller, decided to bend government schooling to the service of business and the political state, as it had been done nearly a century before in Prussia. A higher mission for this project existed too, one to catch the imagination of dreamers and to fire the blood. School was to serve as an instrument for managing evolution, establishing the preconditions for selective breeding. In Thorndike's memorable words, and you'll remember Thorndike is the creator of what we call educational psychology. In Thorndike's memorable words, this had to be done quickly before the new industrial masses, quote, take things into their own hands. Standardized testing would eventually be used to separate those fit to breed and fit to work from those unfit. Because of its traditions, however, America was a resistant population on which to experiment. But thanks to the patronage and the interest of various international business people, a group of academic social engineers was able to visit mainland China in the first three decades of the 20th century. So someone really ought to make a movie about what I'm going to tell you next. And live there, as John Dewey lived in post-revolutionary China for 2 years. In China, these men could test pedagogical theory on a docile and bewildered population which had recently lost its ancient form of governance. Important school superintendents were in on this work, although the general public is in the dark about it to this day. For example, I'd like you to listen to Dr. H.B. Wilson, superintendent of the Topeka schools, writing in his book, which absolutely nobody read or would want to read. It's called Motivation of Schoolwork. He wrote it in 1916, but this one paragraph was worth the agony of reading his whole book. The introduction of the American school into the Orient has broken up 40 centuries of tradition. It has given us a new China and new Japan and is working marked progress in Turkey and the Philippines. The schools are in a position to determine the lines of progress. The Chinese Revolution was Western inspired and Western financed, just as the Russian Revolution soon was to be. And it placed that nation in a favorable state of disintegration for laboratory testing of pedagogical mind alteration technology. Out of this ferment rose a Chinese tracking practice built on the ancient habit of character references, modernized and bureaucratized. It's called in China the Dangan. It is a continuous, lifelong personnel file exposing a student's intimate history from birth through schooling and then through life. The Dangan constitutes a comprehensive overthrow of privacy, and today nobody works in China without a Dangan. By the mid-1960s, preliminary work on an American Dangan was taking place in schools as information reservoirs attached to schooling began to store personal data about individual children. A new class of experts like Ralph Tyler of the Carnegie Foundation began to urge the collection of data and its unification in computer code to enhance cross-referencing with all the other data banks. By 1971, psychologists in the pay of government and private foundations were justifying surreptitious data gathering from children as the moral right of institutions. And I want to take you back. a few years again. Between 1896 and 1920, a small number of powerful industrialists, together with their private foundations, sponsored university administrators, house experts, and house politicians, spent more money on mass force schooling than the government did. Indeed, Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller together spent more money than the government did on schooling between 1900 and 1920. In this laissez-faire fashion, a system of modern schooling was constructed without public participation. I don't blame you if you're a little surprised by this data. But as my publisher was quite surprised by it, and when I demonstrated its validity from the documents of the Carnegie Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, there are others as well, but those are major players. They wouldn't allow it to be printed. I said, but it was written, and it's in public domain. They said they didn't want the hassle. If you want to know the motives of this project, you need only read the first public mission statement of Rockefeller's General Education Board that was printed in its first report to well-wishers, issued in 1906. And I'm going to read you the first paragraph, and I guarantee you it's utterly unbelievable. And if you have children, this ought to be as chilling as anything you've heard recently. In our dreams, people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. The present education conventions of intellectual and character education fade from their minds, and unhampered by tradition, we work our own will upon a grateful and responsive folk. Can you believe people actually wrote this and printed it? We shall not try to make these people or any of their children into philosophers, or men of learning, or men of science. We have not to raise up from them authors, educators, poets, men of letters. We shall not search for artists, painters, musicians, lawyers, doctors, preachers, politicians, statesmen, of which we have an ample supply. The task is simple. We will organize children and teach them in a perfect way the things their fathers and mothers are doing in an imperfect way. The real purpose of modern schooling was announced by Edward Ross of the University of Wisconsin in the same year that was written. Ross is generally considered one of the three founders of the 20th century discipline called sociology. And in a book bluntly called Social Control, Ross wrote, I'll quote directly, "Plans are underway to replace family, church, and community with propaganda, education," he meant schooling, "and mass media. People," he informed his readers, "are only little plastic lumps of dough." Another insider of modern schooling, H.H. Goddard, chairman of the psychology department at Princeton, called government schooling in 1920, quote, "the perfect organization of the hive," close quote. Goddard wrote that standardized testing was to cause the lower classes to confront their biological inferiority, sort of like wearing a dunce cap. In time, it would discourage their reproduction. By 1971, the U.S. Office of Education, now deeply committed to gaining access to the private lives and thoughts of children, granted contracts for 7 volumes of so-called change agent studies to the RAND Corporation. Change agent training was launched with federal funding under the Education Professions Development Act. Soon, the Change Agent's Guide to Innovation in Education appeared. Grants were then awarded to colleges for the training of change agents, while 6 more RAND manuals were printed and distributed to teacher training courses. In 1989, a senior director of the Mid-Continent Regional Education Laboratory, told the 50 governors of the United States assembled in Kansas City for their annual meeting the following. This is a direct quote. Not a word has changed. What we're into is the total restructuring of scientific scholarship, specifically the importation of German research university values to America at the end of the 19th century covered the track of what was going on. What American colleges had traditionally thought about college work is that it was about teaching and learning. It was about individual student growth in intellect, but that's not the way the German system worked. What a German research university was about was direct service to corporations and the political state, using students who paid for the right to donate their services free, along with the paid professional academics. In return for demonstrating, a student demonstrating that he or she had trained adequately and was loyal, the German system then reserved jobs and professional licenses for the appropriate graduates. The University of Chicago, Stanford, Johns Hopkins, Columbia Teachers College, MIT, and Cornell, all colleges endowed by great industrialists, together with the state-endowed university movement represented by schools like Michigan or Wisconsin or Ohio State, joined in concert with the old-line aristocratic American colleges like Yale and Dartmouth, who were flag bearers for the English social class theory, to provide a new and daring purpose for wealth to aspire to, not just spending your money, not just having big parties, but mastering the secrets of evolution and driving society toward a managed scientific utopia. Indiana University, I don't believe, I've never encountered this piece of information, which I dug up. I had been asked to speak at a conference in San Francisco by the Cato Institute last year called the Bionomics Conference. And there was so many, it was at the Mark Hopkins Hotel. The only reason I went was so I never would have been able to afford to stay at the Mark Hopkins. And I took my cat and smuggled it into the room. We had 4 days of... Anyway, there were so many references at this conference to evolution that I said, what is this cockamamie bionomics? And I started to search and hunt, and I stumbled across it, and you're about to get it now, but you and I and the Bionomics Conference people must be the only people in the world who know this. Indiana University provides a good picture of the strategy developing outside the irrelevant debate conducted in the public press. By 1900, a special discipline existed at Indiana only for elite students handpicked by the college president who had created and taught the course. It was called Bionomics, and it dealt with the why and how of producing a new evolutionary ruling class. The president of the college is a famous name in American college history. His name is David Starr Jordan. And Jordan did so well in the middle of nowhere, he was soon invited to join the major leagues of university existence. The invitation was extended by railroad tycoon Leland Stanford, and Jordan became the first president of Stanford University, where he remained for 30 years. But what, you might say, does this have to do with public schooling? Just this. Bionomics gets its direct connection with forced government schooling in this fashion. When he left Indiana, Jordan took along with him to Stanford his star bionomics protege, a 24-year-old named Elwood Cubberley. And in short order, Cubberley was made Dean of Teacher Education at Stanford. And within 2 decades, he was the head of a syndicate controlling school administrative posts from coast to coast. He was the most influential schoolman in 20th century American history. He was also the official historian of American schooling. All the myths you've heard come from Cubberley's History of American Education, which for 50 years was the dominant textbook in teacher training institutions. Did Bionomics have any effect on life in the state of Indiana, where so many sons of prominent Indiana families had studied its arguments for controlled breeding and elimination of the unfit? The answer is yes. The very first formal legislation making forced sterilization by the state a legal act was passed in the state of Indiana, and its practice there became the law of the land in the famous 1927 Supreme Court test case, Buck versus Bell, in which Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote the majority opinion allowing the sterilization of 17-year-old Carrie Buck to prevent her from having degenerate offspring. That's a quote from the Supreme Court decision. 20 years later, I've never met anybody who knows this. So if someone in here knew this, could you just sort of raise your hands? I'll know that someone in the world knows this. 20 years later, after Buck versus Bell, in the trial of the German doctors at Nuremberg after the Second World War, the Nazi physicians testified that their precedents were importantly American ones, and that their name for forced sterilization had been the Indiana procedure. To say this bionomical spirit infected schooling is to say that birds fly. Once you know it's there, the principle is easily tracked. I'm going to track a little bit of it for you so that the groove will be worn and you'll find that you'll be able to add components to this track very easily, just reading the press and watching television. In 1922, Walter Lippmann's book, Public Opinion, demanded severe restrictions on public debate. Those are Lippmann's words. In light of the enormous number of feeble-minded Americans, said Lippmann, the old ideal of participatory democracy is insane. This theme of scientifically controlled breeding interacted in a complex fashion with the German ideal of a scientific society run by experts and the ideal of the British state religion and political society that God himself had appointed the social classes to create a kind of Darwinian caste-based schooling run at long distance to experts unseen who manipulated hired hands called school teachers and school administrators. And all this was for the ultimate good of the best breeding stock. In 1928, Sigmund Freud's favorite nephew, Edward L. Bernays, who is the creator of the craft that we call today public relations, said in his book, Crystallizing Public Opinion, that, quote, invisible power is now in control of every aspect of American life. Democracy, said Bernays, is only a front for skillful wire pulling tricks the new sciences of mental manipulation could place at the disposal of policy people for a price. By 1944, the jettisoning of natural rights resonated through every corner of American academic life. Any academic who expected free money from foundations, corporations, or government would play the scientific management string on his lute. In 1961, the German concept of the political state as a fatherland surfaced in John F. Kennedy's inaugural address, in which his listeners were lectured, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And in 1995, Time magazine, I believe it's the first issue in February, lectured its readers in a cover story that, quote, democracy is in the worst interest of national goals. The modern world is too complex to allow the man or woman in the street to interfere in its management. Now the secret was in the open. The original American Commonwealth ideal had been repudiated by its guardians. In the same year, some of the methodology used to achieve this repudiation was brought to light in a long documentary film, which I'll bet shows around Nashville. It's called Manufacturing Consent. It was about the career of the legendary MIT professor Noam Chomsky, the world's foremost linguistic scholar. But Chomsky's interests haven't been in linguistics for at least 20 years. In the film, Chomsky confirmed a growing popular suspicion that the news you hear is tightly controlled. He showed that all the news in the world, pouring through mass channels, is under the direction of 23 global corporations, which spin propaganda on every side of every issue, thus constricting public imagination wherever important interests are in question. School was an important terminal on a production line to create a utopian world resembling a gigantic Epcot Center, or perhaps the Mother Chautauqua of late 19th century fame, a utopia before its time. There was only one important eugenical limitation on this school-created utopia to come. It wasn't intended for everyone, at the most for 20% of the existing population. And out of Johns Hopkins University in 1996 came this chilling piece of supporting data. I'm going to quote from the Hopkins report. The American economy has grown massively since the mid-1960s, but workers' real spendable wages are no higher than they were 30 years ago. The purchasing power of a working couple in 1995 was, after inflation was factored in, the same as earned by a single working man 90 years earlier. This steep decline in American common prosperity then forced both parents from home and forced their kids into the managed world of daycare and extended schooling. And although you and I have been harangued endlessly, century-long, that enlarging the scope of schooling would cause wealth to be more evenly spread, exactly the reverse has occurred. Wealth was 250% more concentrated by 1998 than it was in 1898. I don't mean to be inflammatory, he said, but it's as if government school has made people dumber, not brighter, made families weaker, not stronger, has ruined formal religion with its hard sell exclusion of God, has set the class structure in stone by dividing children into classes and setting them against one another, and has been midwife to an alarming concentration of wealth and power in the hands of a fraction of our national community. Real school reform would have to overthrow a powerful form of mental conditioning which has taken a century to implant. To one degree or another, all of us have been indoctrinated in a variety of ways to believe that the American experiment, which promised ordinary people sovereignty over their own lives, was wrong-headed and childish. Real school reform would have to defeat the belief, learned in school and reinforced through the media, that ordinary people are too stupid, too irresponsible, too childish to be trusted to look out for themselves. When children are encouraged to run wild in school and to become stupid there, this poisonous lesson is hammered home for the rest of us day after day. We've all experienced it. No wonder we all believe it. The premises of scientific schooling seem impossible to dispute, so thoroughly have they been demonstrated by the form of forced schools which corporations and the federal government imposed on us a century ago. After all, why should hopelessly ignorant people be allowed to make decisions, even intimate personal ones like how to raise their own children? Certified experts are available who know vastly more than about everything and anything. Thus has the Protestant Reformation, whose brightest product was America, been thrown on the scrap heap, because if there's any bedrock of the Protestant Reformation, it was Luther's declaration, every man his own priest. Jefferson and Madison must have been loony to want us to trust the common people. Now let me take, in conclusion, a stab at a reply. To have better schools that served families and communities and individuals, instead of suffocating them, we would need to trash certain assumptions. We would need to abandon entirely the idea that any such sociological reality as mass man actually exists, except in the minds of those who benefit from such a belief. We would have to believe what our fingerprints and our intuition tell us, that no two people are alike, that nobody can be accurately described by numbers and graphs, that trying to do this sets up an endless chain of future grief. We would have to accept that a fantasy like scientific pedagogy is impossible, because each person has a private and a singular destiny. We would need to transfer faith from school and corporate experts and behave as if these principles were true, as over 1 million homeschooling families in this country do. We would need to wake up and admit that knowledge is a far cry from wisdom, that each American has the right to live as he or she deems wise, and if the way individuals choose to live and raise their kids means disaster for global corporations, as surely the way of life the Amish embraced, if it were embraced by too many, would mean disaster, then that faithful choice still needs to be honored, because it is protected by the law that defines America, our founding documents. It's high time we all remembered what mankind needed an America for in the first place. The brilliant dialectical balance struck by our founders was the only way to keep power weak and off balance, official power and popular power both. Popular will would beat back government tyranny. Government would check popular tyranny over minority rights. This constant confrontation, this unwinnable war between two flawed, collectivizing principles, coercive government and bullying public opinion, will always produce liberty for those who want it. In the stalemate, liberty escapes as long as the argument is kept alive. It's only through enforced consensus, the product of too much and the wrong kind of schooling, that America can fail. America is about argument, about doing things our own way. It is still the only place on the planet where one can publicly oppose authority without being beaten or killed or severely intimidated for that act of free will. The U.S. Supreme Court wrote in the flag-burning case that the only true test of freedom is the right to differ about things that touch the heart of the existing order. And the court was right. That truly is the standard. Let us strike to the heart of this thing then, and take back our children from the management engineers. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For live programming schedules, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'd love to hear from you. Get in on the conversation that we're about to have. Give us a call at 1-641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549033. 32. I posted that video that we just played. Then it's called Get Your Kids Out of Public School Now by John Gatto. I don't say kids because kids is nothing more, you know, it's a term for a baby goat. And if you know what the goat symbolizes, it is the reason why I never try to use calling young people or children kids, because it's a very demonic condensation that goes along with that is intended for that very reason. And we get so indoctrinated with things that we don't even realize that we call on your grimoires and your grammar will call on spirit that you may not want or totally disagree with, because spirits are living beings just as you are, and they do exist. And by you calling on them, and that's one of the things that, you know, I make sure that I don't do, you know, from time to time I have to break myself of it, but I never use that term, because I know what that term means and where it comes from and what the spirit that's being invoked in that position. So I call young people children and call them as they should, by their names and by the spirit that they were created by love. And I do not use that so-called, you know, term of calling them something that they're not. They're not any part or any form of a goat, nor the representation and the symbolism of the goat. And if you don't know what the symbolism of the goat is, I would definitely tell you to take a look at it. It doesn't take much research to do it. It's basically the animal that represents the devil and the spirit of deception, the spirit of mischief, the spirit of murder, the spirit of to deprive and to destroy. So I never use that term and try to make sure that I don't. And, you know, we get so used to hearing it, and we think there is nothing to it. But just, and that's why we are in the position that we're in. So, hey, I hope you enjoyed the video. Man, it was so much that was said that we need to really talk about. Would love to hear from you. Some things I definitely agree with, which is so much. And, you know, I got my man in Q. Can't wait to talk to him. I knew this was covered because this brother is you know, so powerful. But there's some things that was said that we need to talk about that I really, really would love for us to take a look at collectively, because if we don't ask the right question, then we will continue to be led on a leash of a chain that binds us all. So, would love to hear from you. Get in on the conversation, 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. So let's go to the callers that's there real quick. Not real quick, but just to go to the callers. I don't like to keep them waiting. Welcome to Tando Radio Show. What's your name, what you calling from, and what's your question or comment?
Hey, peace, it's Brother Bragg.
Brother Bragg, man.
You know I'm over here chomping at the bit on that, though. You know I'm sitting here hey, listen. This mass indoctrination process. Look, these eugenics boys, this is all Hitler's thing. But,
yes.
But not just Hitler. It's America's thing. Let's not get it twisted. Let's keep it like it's supposed. Let's spit it truthfully.
Wait. Hold on, Brother Bragg. Brother Bragg, because
okay,
I'm glad you
said
that.
Let me slow down.
Because that's exactly where I was going to go with. I said I have a problem.
I know you're
going
to go to the meeting. We've got to clear it up for them, because we don't want them to misconstrue who these Nazis are. These Nazis are right here in our midst. So,
right.
These boys came, these Nazis came to America and conferred with these American eugenicists, who Bill Gates' father was one of them, was one of the starters of it. And many, many major corporations funded these guys, these American corporations we talked about before. So it's very important that you remember that, because that's very important. These industrialists, all these boys are scheming. They're talking about they don't want defects and mentals. This is the eugenics. This is the prime example of it. Who is to say who? Look, the people who are thinking of this stuff, these megalomaniacs who are coming up with this stuff, are a bunch of defectives in thought anyway to come up with this stuff.
Yep.
He who says he's superior is usually the one that's defective. His thought process is defective. It tells you that just by listening to them.
Right. And you know what, Brother Bragg, just before, and it's so, we don't even realize how deep this is. You can see it in in current, you wouldn't even realize it, but if you did the research on people, very people that are so-called, I call them the celebrity figures, whoever you see, Bill Gates, Turner, we could go on and on.
Remember this, who publishes the books? When you talk about school
right.
and our children, look,
right.
these people publish the books that form the ideals to shroud children to make them feel that they're less than. So you
right,
got to
right.
understand that it's all one massive conspiracy. They've been getting away with it for so long. Now people are waking up and really paying attention. That's why at some point you can't let these people no longer school your children. You must school your children yourself. It's the only way things are going to change, because they're still trying to indoctrinate these children to be servants, slaves, to feel like anything other than first-class citizens.
Right, right, right. And see, you know what, Brother Braggs, and that's so key, because – you know, if you look at, let's say, the celebrity figures, I always call them celebrity figures because most people say they're the elected officials that they elect. If you know, if you just do look at the current administration, look at Valerie Jarrett, look who her stepfather was. Look who Timothy Geithner parents were. They worked together hand in hand.
They picked these people.
Exactly. And they were
all
a part of the whole eugenics programming that's been going on. This is why John P. Holdren is the science czar. And look at the so-called, the so-called president.
Look, it even goes into your food with the Food and Drug Administration. You can't
right.
get this food, this GMO food banned, because these people have handpicked the people they put at the top of departments. So they come off, it looks like they come off the road, but they come from universities. These boys are all from the same clique, from the same school.
Fraternity.
And look, they'll send them from two different sides, have you totally confused. So don't get caught in the hand trick. These boys have been doing this for hundreds of years. These are masters of deception.
The masters of deception through propaganda.
Don't get caught in the facade. Don't get caught in that razzle dazzle. Don't try to watch the nut under the thing. Watch his hand. Stomp his hand.
Yeah. And I say the most important thing is turn the table over and don't damn play.
That's right.
Walk
that's
away.
Right. Stomp his hand. We don't want to know where the nut is. We know the game is rigged.
The nut is the one that is sitting there watching it. And, you know, this
yes,
is why,
sir.
You know, one of the things that I always say is that the key to magic is not to trick you, but to make you believe. And, you know, Brother Rags, it's so true in everything that you were saying. And it's something that now we know why we have a nation of cowards, because we've been neutered from being a spirit that is free. We've been conditioned to be domesticated into a spirit that's docile. This is why they can do whatever they want to the children. You know,
when we talk about realities, that's that reality. You have other people forming your reality. When they form your books and they structure the rooms that you walk into and the curricula that you use, you're in here for all a day. Now just imagine this. You go to school from 0 to 12th grade. That's like 13 years. By the time you come out, the way this indoctrination process, because they use this is modeled after Hitler's Youth too. They send us to school with the expectation of not giving us anything. It's just a facade. The only thing they want to do is take any identity that you have, any individuality that you have, and scrap it. If you have any intellect, any cognizant reasoning thought, they want to muddle that water and leave you totally baffled and confused. That's white supremacy at its best. That's what it's made to do. It's made to wreck shit. Excuse my
right.
language.
Right. No, but you know what? They do it in plain sight. This
That's
is
right.
why they call it elementary school.
And we pay for it.
Why they call it middle
school. We pay for it.
Right. This is why they call it high school. And this is why they call it so-called higher learning in college and after school. And the whole thing is to indoctrinate you. This is, you know, one of the things is that what they try to do is break down the relentless human spirit and to get that spirit to surrender. This is why they have children go to a place of employment, because children work for the state through schools. Because they work for the state through schools because they are the ones that will be the providers for the state in the future, not even for themselves nor their families. This is why they start with kindergarten, start with preschool, start as early as possible, start through vaccinations to totally alter what the great creator God Almighty has instilled in and has given to each and every living person, a strong free will. And then what do? They slowly break that down over years. Who would put a child under pressure for 8 hours a day when that spirit needs to be able to be in the environment and learning how to what?
Be in tune with its environment.
Exactly.
Be in tune with its environment. Learn things that mean something, not rote learning.
Exactly, because when you're in tune with the environment, you need not another man. You need only your... Well, listen, get ready to go to a commercial break. I hear the music. When we come back, we're going to further this conversation. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call at 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. Listen to the Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Host of Time for an Awakening Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network. Speaking in behalf of Black Talk Media Project's 2015 fundraiser. Since 2008, the Black Talk Media Project, which has created Black Talk Radio Network, has engaged in producing original content from a black perspective for the global black community. You can help us continue this mission and help us even more by giving donations to the Black Talk Media Project's 2015 fundraiser and asking others to do so also. Let us work together to make 2015 a stronger year for independent black media. Again, this is Elliot Booker of Time for Awakening Radio Program.
In my window, man. Welcome back, everyone, to Tando Radio Show, brought to you by Black Talk Radio Network. Today's discussion is the imprisonment of our children's minds is being carried out daily, and the state is the one that is doing it to maintain the overall paradigm of ways and means. Your way of life will provide for their means of life. And you know, we got my man, Brother Braggs. We're going to jump back in with the conversation with Brother Braggs, because I know this is a lot that he has to say. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, definitely give us a call, 614-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. You know, Brother Braggs, just, you know, one of the things what we were just talking about before going to the break, because when we're in tune with the overall environment, we're in tune into what's sustainable and how we can live really free and independent, and how we can live a more peaceful life without having to destroy the environment in order for to provide for ourselves or our family, to where we will have enough and not to be subject to gluttony, be subject to greed, be subject to murder and to dissent and control and manipulation, because there is no need for that. You know, one of my favorite societies is the Patet Society out of they're in the Malaysia area, and they do not allow their children to compete, because allowing their children to compete is means the destruction of their peaceful society, one of the most peaceful societies on earth. And you know, just think about it, Brother Braggs, and everyone else that's listening. Just think about this for a minute. When you look at the system in which controls and manipulates our young minds and the young people and our children's overall thought process and direction in life, they start at the early age. They interrupt their sleep when their body is recharging. How many times have you ever tried to wake up your children for school, and it's a difficult thing? You know why it's so difficult? Because they're not supposed to be up at that time at all. And what you're really doing is you're indoctrinating them into the stress of being a slave, when they should actually be living a more sustainable, meaningful life to where they can perpetuate freedom. And that freedom needs to come from the interaction with what God has created.
the ecosystem. But man requires that they participate in the manipulation of the economy, which is based off of slavery. The real target of everything from the eugenics to the depopulation has always been and always will center itself primarily around the children. And they give us this false pretense, and we don't even realize whenever you graduate from their schools, there's a reason why you wear a cap and a gown, and there's a reason why that cap is a square. It means that you surrendered to the box of thinking that was designed by someone else to manipulate you. This is why you wear a cap on your head that's a square. We never ask the question, because the square was a part of the manipulation process and foundation for manipulation that these societies and these few individuals that got together in family and through a demonic and a secret society ritual to indoctrinate and enslave and manipulate the rest of humanity. And we celebrate it daily, not even realize that we're a part of our own demise, because we don't think for ourselves anymore. We don't question. So, Brother Braggs, hold on, Brother Braggs. We got another caller. Let's bring this caller in. I want you to hear whatever they say, and then let's keep it going, Brother Braggs. Hold on one sec, okay? Brother Braggs? Okay, let's welcome caller to Tando Radio Show. What's your name? Where you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Hi, Dave. This is Cece.
Cece! What's going on, Cece? I know this is like, yo, this is, let me tell you, I know this is like right up, this is like right up your, you know, train of thought, because we've had many conversations about this, and I know this is something that's dear to you.
Yes, absolutely, it is dear to me, and it needs to be dear to all of us, because the
right.
majority of us do have children, and we send them to school without even thinking, because that's just what we have been trained to do. You know, no, we can't turn back the hands of time and do things, you know, yesterday, you know, but now is the time to operate in the knowledge that you do have, because these people don't mean our children anything good at all. That you're sending them to these places, like the man said, with strangers. I don't care if they have a degree. They're strange. They're strange. And look who they have in front of your children. They're strange people with strange ideas. So, I mean, we yeah. really need to be looking at that and reconfigure and restructure our day. Yes, we all do have to make a living. We do have to work. We do have to do this and that. But if you restructure yourself and take yourself out of the rat race by any means necessary, group together with other people that have the same idea and are like-minded and too want to homeschool their children, you can take turns. There's a lot of things that we can do in order to make this happen. And Brother Braggs was talking about the kids being indoctrinated from 0 to 12th grade. Well, we know that kids go to kindergarten at about age 4 or 5, mm-hmm. sometimes 6. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, with early childhood education, now I can speak on this from the state of Washington. They have been shutting people's in-home licensed child cares down for the last, I would say, 10 years. And an in-home licensed child care gives you more of a nurturing environment
right.
versus a center. So they've been shutting down the in-home licensed child cares left and right, because they're moving toward a universal government system for the young children, and that's like age 6 weeks and up. So we have to really be aware of that. We're dropping our kids off to complete strangers who are indoctrinated by the government.
Right quick, they did the same thing to the Aborigines children. They did the same thing to the black children, because the Indians here in America were black and Native American. They did the same thing to those children. They put them in Indian schools. They took all their customs
yeah.
away from them. It's the same process. These boys use the same strategy, because it's all colonialism. It's all imperialism. I mean, you got to look at it for what it is. We got to start looking at this stuff critically. We can't just sit back anymore and just let things blow by. Now, I sent my kids to Catholic school. I didn't know the history of the Catholic school, but my kids, thank mm-hmm. God, they made it through. And I had conversations with my kids when they were young, like, if anybody puts their hands on you, you make sure Nobody touches your personal body. But that's another story. But
that's good. That's another story. But
you gotta talk to them like that. You gotta know that they can come to you. If anything happens, they gotta know they can come to you. But this
indoctrination
is the thing,
Brother Bragg. I understand what you're saying, but listen, the way that the system is set up, you can talk to your kids till they're blue in the face. The way that children's minds work is very different than the way that adult minds work. I'll give you an example of myself. Okay, when I was 3 years old, my parents used to go visit some family members, okay? I was 3 years old. Now, we would go to these people's houses and the kids go off and play, right? Okay, kids go off and play, fine. Younger kids, older kids, whatever, all in a bunch. Well, when we would get upstairs, it never failed. After the first 5 minutes, they would lock me in the closet. They would lock me in a dark closet, a little three-year-old, and I would be in that closet until it was time to go home. Now, you can imagine the fear of a little three-year-old child in a dark closet, okay? So when it was time to go home, whew, yes, it's time to go home. I never told my parents that was going on. It wasn't that they didn't have a relationship with me, but the way that my little three-year-old mind worked, it did not remember to tell them, like, every time we're going back to that house, that this is going to happen to me. Every kid has different capabilities. Their brains work differently. Yes, you can say what you need to say to them, and hopefully, you know, everything will sink in like it needs to, and you will have that child that is telling you, hey, this is going on. But the way that these manipulators work in the school system,
That's why you got to be on. You got to be the parent to your child. You got to be closer to your child than these people. You have to be closer to your children than these people. See, that's the whole connect. That's the disconnect right there. Let me show you another just quick parallel. Slavery. Children in slavery didn't have any respect for their mothers and fathers because they didn't have any control over them. After a child was born, he was given to the slave master. They want to take it back to that same paradigm. But we can look right through that. So the thing is, you must have a connection with your children. If you have that connection, other people, they may have an influence, but they won't have control. And the other thing about a small child, you have to instill in that child the fire that you're an individual too and you're important. My children will amaze you because that's what when you see them, their light shines because they're going to let you know I'm an individual because that's how they were raised. We communicate. Now, I'm a hard father figure, so we don't have lovey-dovey conversations. We have crucial conversations. We don't do play. We don't do jokes. We don't do that. We do straight love. And 'cause I'm a facilitator, first of all. That's who I am. I'm not your friend. Never have been. I'm your daddy. So that's how I roll, you know.
Yeah.
Well, good. That's good.
Brother Braggs and CC, you know what? The points that CC's made are so incredible. The points that you made are so incredible. And this is the whole thing is like – what you were saying, Brother Bragg, and it's like exactly what CC was saying. CC was saying basically, and I know you agree, Brother Bragg, and it's the reason why
I'm just showing you the parallels of how these people are trying to take our children,
right.
And they will take them if we don't get in there and step in there and interject. We have to be the advocate first of all, and if you're an advocate, you're gonna be all right with your kids.
But listen to this one. Let me give this one to you. I'm a single mom. Okay, there is a huge. There's a dynamic difference in if you're dealing with a mom, if you're dealing with a dad, if these people know what's going on, you know. There's, like I said, they are very dangerous. And you can talk to your kids till you're blue in the face. I'm not saying that it won't get through to them. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is there are some that won't process it the way that you wish for it to be processed. So you have to be on point, and you have to know who's with your kids the majority of the time. They're at school. Let me see. They leave school, 7:30 in the morning, and they don't get back till 3:30. They might have an after-school program because you have to work. Those kids might not see you until 5:30 or 6 o'clock. Who has the most influence over your children if they are with those people all throughout the day, 5 days a week? I mean, come on. We just have to think logically about that.
Right. You know what? And let me make this point because it's so important, and it's to put everything into focus here. Not only are our children schooled, but we are because we allow them to go to school. We allow this to happen. And just like Brother Braggs and just like what you were saying, CC, what's the solution to this? Do not send your children to school. That's the real solution to this all. And in order for you to do that, now people will come up, well, how, you know, what about this? See, now, you're bringing in reasons to compromise. The key to this whole thing is to dismantle the system. And until we start dismantling this system, it will continue to manifest itself and we'll continue to be in a position where we don't have a position of advantage. We're actually in a position of disadvantage. There is no greater teacher for our children than our elders and our parents, their very parents themselves. But see, us as the parents, we've been caught in the system because we've been schooled ourselves to get out there and go to a job to provide for, not for our family, but provide for the structure that destroys the family. And that's really the problem. Until we get away from, and the school and the system wants us to be in a position of disadvantage, to where we're saying, well, okay, well, we could put them in this school or put them in this school, or we could do this, or, you know, this child is this way. When it comes to children, they're impressionable. They can be influenced by so many things. And that's the time that you want to cultivate their young minds and to be strong. Like what Brother Braggs was saying, and like what you were saying, Cece, as far as, you know what, they're taking this child at the worst possible time. So this child is actually being maneuvered and massaged into something other than what they could be. And that's the real big problem here. The real big problem that we have is the system. It's not us. It's not you. Now, there are some people that do not, you know, really shouldn't have the responsibilities of children. But see, how can we say that there are some people that don't have the responsibility of the children when we have a system and a society that doesn't have that, that has that same mentality, that actually perform those same acts and actually perform, have that same intention to destroy? But it's so, so important. But hey, Brother Braggs and Cece, hey, we got two other callers. We get running out a little time. Just hold on. Don't hang up. Let's just hear what the other people have to say, because I want to, at the end, put it all together, because your voices, because what you guys talk about and how you guys think, you are truly, truly free people that live in an enslaved state, but you never get given up your mentality and your free will. So hold on. Let's check out with some of these other people that we have our callers here. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What is your name? Where are you calling from? What's your question or comment?
Hey, Dave, it's Kaziah.
Hey, Kaziah, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. So, hey, go ahead, Kaziah.
Real quick, I know you're running out of time, so I want to speak on what Cece was saying, as well as you and Brother Bragg. As far as when it comes to the rat race and when it comes to the jobs, like you were saying just a few minutes ago, if we don't look at what's going on, if we don't look at how we can channel a better way of educating our children, a better way of providing for ourselves, then it's not that we're the problem, but we're on the same level with the system, because we're not readjusting how we need to do things. And what I mean by that is simple. When we look at and I think you and I have talked about this before, we look at these possessions, and the reason why we get up and go to work is so we can maintain these possessions that we have. So in essence, we're possessed because we do these things. We leave our home for hours on a day. For example, I'm just literally putting in my yard, and I left my house at 7 this morning. So for hours, I'm away from home. And that's unnecessary when my children are not being educated and being, you know, fulfilled by me, you know, because that's one of my purposes. So we have to really look at that and adjust. So I've come to the conclusion that I have to adjust it. This is not going to work. I have to look at what is keeping me from doing that, readjust that. I have to also listen to my children. And to monkey back on what Cece said, children do things differently. And my children have expressed to me and have shown me that they are not fit for school, because they want to learn on a natural basis, learn on a, and be in tune. They are in tune. They show me that regularly. So if I as a parent or I as a guider don't show them that, then who am I? What does that say for me? So I have to readjust. Does that mean no longer run this rat race and readjust things, and readjust my possessions? Then that's what I need to do. And that's really all I want to say.
Man, great, great point, Keziah, because it's a matter of the reason why they call them possessions, because you become possessed, spiritually possessed by the holding of things, and not, you learn to love things and not to love people or other living things. Hold on. Great point, Keziah. Hold on one sec. I've got a couple of other people I want to get them in, so that they can express their question or comment. Just hold on. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What's your name, where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment? Area code 708-837 is the prefix. What's your name and where you're calling from, and what's your question or comment? You're on the air.
That's me, man. That's me.
Oh, okay.
That's me,
okay.
Dad.
Okay, hold on, Brother Bragg. Hold on. Welcome, caller, to Tando Radio Show. What's your name, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment?
What's up, Dave, my brother? How you been? This is Brother Davis.
Man, Brother Davis and Sister Davis, I know. Whew. What's going on, Brother Davis? Go ahead.
Hey, man, listen, I wanted y'all to know, this is close to our heart. That's why we spend so much time with our grandchildren.
Yeah.
Because we know there's an indoctrination program. It was never about the adults. Because, you know, it was easier to procure the mindset of a child than it is an adult. So we have to take the responsibility that they literally took from us through subduing us with the cash, with the so-called jobs to give us a better quality of life, where what they were doing was stripping the living out of our lives.
Right.
Okay. So I just wanted to put that out there real quick. Once again, we are the generals. We don't have to put up with that unless you decide to submit your children to it. But we can make a difference. Sister Keziah, she spoke out and told you what she's doing as an individual in her circumstance. We all must understand this, that we can only start making a difference from where we stand. And if we are strong enough and people understand our message, then we'll get a greater voice as we go along. But we must make a difference. Look, I'm going to hang up because I'm in traffic up here in Hickory Mountain, North Carolina. Peace, brothers.
Team Davis, give my love to Sister Davis. Hey, you know, listen, we have still on the line. We have Cece. Cece, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, I know Brother Braggs is there. Keziah, you still there?
I'm still here.
And I know that Brother Davis just hung up. You know, what I would really, really like to do, this is something that we really have to get behind, because this is the real agenda. And this is what has to be broken. And so what I would love to do is for us to set up just another whole show and then let that go into another direction. Because, you know, I just believe that when you give energy to something, you will give everything that has energy has life. And I would like to give more energy to this so that life can come from this. And I can think of no better people than to continue this conversation that can turn into an action plan, because I know some of the things that you guys have done individually and you know, that has been remarkable. I mean, because this group right here, the from Brother Davis to CC to Brother Braggs and Keziah, these are real, real spiritual warriors. And you'll always hear me say that a soldier could never do what a warrior thinks. And I know the warrior spirit in each and every one of you. And this is something that I think we're going to have to change. Is it going to be difficult? It doesn't matter how difficult it is. Can we make excuses? It doesn't matter. The most important thing is this, is that we give energy to a different way so that we can redesign and get back to who we were. They say, and by 2030, that most of the trees, 2030 and 2045, that most of the trees on this planet will be gone.
I believe
they're getting rid of what? The great sustaining garden that God had made for sustainability. They tried to teach us about a Garden of Eden, but didn't realize they said it was just in one spot. There's no such thing as God putting anything in one spot. It's everywhere. It comes from the energy of creation. So listen, the show is ending. Got to get ready to get out of here. It's Wednesday. Hey, Brother Braggs, thank you so much for all that you do and calling. CC, man, priceless, because one of the things that was really key with what you said is that it was easy for someone to take a child and put them in a box and close the door in a dark place. That is the real agenda, so that that child can't be who they are. And that's what's really behind it all. Keziah, with the possessions, that's really what this is all about. We got to break our possessions. Brother Braggs, with realizing that we got to build
a... Slaves are not born, they're made. You have to make a slave. A slave is not born. You have to disconnect that being and turn him into other, into chattel. So that's why I always say that.
Yep.
You have to make a slave.
Say that one more time, Brother Bragg.
Slaves are not born. You have to create a slave. You got all the stimuli around us to keep a slave from being created. That's why we here. So that can't transpire anymore.
So true. So true. And that is, you know, to end on that, well said. CC, thank you so much, Brother Bragg, Keziah, Brother Davis. As always, this is something that we really, really, because there's so much more. And I want to give much more time to us and to you, because the only solutions that are going to come out of this whole thing is that we have to do more than just talking about it. Now that we've introduced the problem, now we have to start to energize a solution. And believe me, we have all the time in the world, because there's nothing that they've ever created and told us that was the truth. I don't believe in time. I believe in eternity. It's the only thing that matters. So everyone, thank you for listening today. That concludes the show. Remember, before you ask for a blessing, to be a blessing is never goodbye. As always, I'll see you later. And until then, we'll carry this on. Let's carry this on. How about tomorrow? We need to pick up on this tomorrow. If you guys are available, we'll do something more on this, because this is so, so important. Let's not put it off for another day. Let's use the energy and the eternity that we have to mold it. So, okay, everyone, thank you for listening today. Much love and much respect. We'll talk to you later.
You know tenderness comes from pain. It's amazing how you love. Love is kind.